Coming up today, a man who built a private space firm, an electric sports car company, and PayPal has come up with a revolutionary new way of transporting you from A to B at 800 miles per hour. Plus, we've learned that flatworms can retain memories when their heads are sliced off and transfer those memories to new brains. And as BlackBerry suggests it's going to put itself up for sale, we ask what the future might be for the Canadian phone maker. All that plus your valuable comments and feedback, as well as news that jetpacks are coming over the next 30 minutes. This is the Wired.co.uk podcast, your weekly guide to the important and the interesting, from science and tech to invertebrate decapitation and recycling bin controversies. I'm your host, Nate Langson. I'm the editor of Wired.co.uk.
I'm Olivia _ Solon.
And I'm Leah Clark.
And I just did that intro in one breath.
It's a bit of a tongue twister.
I'm impressed with my own mouth. Well done, mouth. Take a bow. We have some news. I wanted to congratulate Liat. She's about to get married.
Oh, yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
She will leave a fiancé and return a wife.
I'm just a person.
Yeah.
I don't label me.
No. I, on the other hand, am still single, so if anyone wants to marry me...
Just write in.
Yes, podcast at Wired.co.uk. Subject line...
Inappropriate.
Yes. All those things and more. Now, a little bit of housekeeping. I'm not going to be here for the next 2 weeks because I'm working on a massive feature and I'm heading to Japan to report on said feature, and we'll be there for 2 weeks. So you will be in the capable hooves of Olivia _ Solon for
Indeed.
The next 2 weeks.
And who knows who else? It won't be Leah, that's for sure.
Let's get on with some news, shall we? Elon Musk. May have heard of him.
Yep.
Yep. He is the founder of SpaceX, the private space travel, space firm that takes people up to the ISS, amongst other ideas. He is also the co-founder of the electric sports car company Tesla. He is also the founder of PayPal. And this week he revealed details for an entirely new mode of domestic transport called Hyperloop. Do you guys know what Hyperloop is?
I've got a mental image of it.
Okay, good. Well, Hyperloop is a supersonic land-based train-like system that packs 12 passengers into small tubes, which would whip across the ground at 800 miles an hour, and is intended to connect San Francisco and Los Angeles, reducing the 400-mile journey to a 30-minute jaunt.
This is so convenient.
It's basically, have you ever seen in supermarkets when they need to offload some of the cash from the cash register, and they put it into these tubes, and they have a special kind of suction
tube?
Oh, they
suck them up.
By the side of their...
Yeah, I've only ever seen that on
and
TV.
And it gets sucked up into the cash repository.
Yeah.
It's like that, basically, but with
our human
bigger
bodies.
It is totes like that. Yeah. So Musk's plan says that this could cost up to $10 billion, but ticket prices could be as low as around 13 quid, the equivalent of, he said $20, I think.
Like,
now, these numbers seem a little bit pie in the sky because inevitably with these things, it ends up costing way more than is scheduled. So pinch of salt. But as a goal, they're certainly attractive numbers, I think. Is it me or is Elon Musk feeling a little bit like a modern day Da Vinci?
Yeah. Is there nothing he can't do?
I mean, the guy's a genius.
It's funny, the kind of the line between genius and kind of craziness. I think maybe 10 years ago, people were saying that Elon Musk was, you know, being ridiculous for suggesting that this private space travel could be a possibility. And as time goes on, you realise that actually this moonshot thinking, which is such a horrible buzzword, is actually paying off.
Yeah. And I mean, the great thing about this idea is that if it came from many other people, you would dismiss it as science fiction, as pie in the sky, 30 years away dreamlike thinking. You know, how much drugs have you done? A lot of drugs? Yes, that'll explain it. But because it's Elon Musk, he has this track record of coming up with ideas that seem almost bizarre and unrealistic, and then making them happen. So the background to this is that he does believe that this could be done within sort of 7, 8, 9, 10 years, something like that, if he dedicated himself to it. But he's thinking of maybe just doing some sort of a demonstrative prototype and then having somebody else step in and actually do the building and maybe run it. And I wonder, I could totally see Richard Branson getting on board with this.
Yeah.
If Musk proves that it is technically possible, that, you know, the facilities could be developed, that the materials exist that he wants to use, all it needs is someone with enough funding to be able to put up the initial amount of cash needed, and then you know, get on with it. Do
Ricky
it.
B.
Yeah. Virgin could be good. Could totally see Sergey Brin doing something like this. I mean, he funded the lab-grown burger
that
we talked about last week. Do you want to know how this will work?
Yeah, I want to know how much energy. Right. This actually has to use it.
Okay, so here's how it would work. The capsules that you would sit in would be housed within these two vacuum tubes, and these would be sort of suspended on the top of pillars about 50 to 100 metres apart. And they would have these sort of ski-like tracks underneath these capsules, which are, I think, quite small, probably house about 12 people, I think. And air is sort of pumped out from underneath of the ski-like bits underneath the capsules onto a track. So it's basically sort of hovering, a little bit like an air hockey
disc.
Puck. Disc, yes.
Oh, yeah, puck.
And then there is a jet compressor engine thing at the front. Actually, I'm not sure if it's a jet. It's an engine on the front that is sucking air in from the front and then pumping it out at the back. And that is propelling this thing across these huge distances at incredible speeds. But because it's in a vacuum tube, because it's not on like rails, there's no wheels involved, the friction is cut down to such an extent that it can travel without the sort of resistance that a train would come into, for example. Which is interesting. I mean, Musk reckons that this type of system would be best served for distance that are like 900 miles, so just under 1,000 miles. Actually, I'm pretty sure that difference in that number was probably quite obvious, because acceleration times are still quite long, so it takes a while for this to build up its speed.
I'm wondering when you have to press stop, how long is it going to take you when you're halfway round?
Well, quite a long time, I think, is the problem. And in fact, I remember reading that they will reverse the process. So the jet engine on the engine on the front sort of sucks the air in and pumps it out the back. It would work the other way round to slow it down. So engines at the back would sort of suck it in and pump it out the front to sort of slow it down. But I think this is all fascinating. I mean, there are parts of this, and comparisons have been made to when the Segway was announced. And I don't know if you remember when that happened, but it was triumphed as being this amazing, groundbreaking new mode of transport that's going to change the way cities are going to be laid out. I think it was demoed on like a US TV breakfast show. It was so significant that at the time South Park parodied it. And at the time I saw this South Park episode, it's called It, I think, is when Mr. Garrison creates this thing that you sit on various phallic-shaped objects in order to control. It was a total parody of the amount of hype that was around the Segway. And I think that although the Segway is very cool and the technology's ace, it never really changed the way that the vast majority of people travel.
But this will look cool. Segway didn't.
Maybe this could be the next big thing. So very interesting stuff. We've got a big story on .co.uk. If you search for Hyperloop, or one word, lots of information there. And Musk has released a 57-page white paper, which is open to people to peruse and look at and perhaps even develop. And we've linked to that from the story. It's time to talk about decapitation. It's where the head is separated from the body.
Yeah.
And science gushes forth. Because that's what this is about, isn't it?
You and I would not get over that.
No.
However, the planarian flatworm does, and it does it with style.
Go on, then. I love this story. I edited this piece. I absolutely adored it.
So these little guys are pretty incredible. They have amazing regenerative powers, which we already know. However, it has been discovered that they can actually retain memories when the heads are sliced off, then transfer said memories to the new brain in its new head.
Amazing.
I know.
And these are the creatures that can basically rebuild themselves from the tiniest...
From nothing. There was some ridiculous study done in 1898 where they can rebuild from a piece of tissue 1/279th the size of its original body.
It can grow itself back.
That's but like not one my fingernail.
Not 180.
No, that's when it stopped. I guess it's really hard to sever them up in so many pieces. The guy could only
slice
so many pieces. So yeah, they're pretty amazing. And we already knew this. And I think they had some inklings that it could retain memories. But it's quite hard to kind of judge a flatworm. We can't ask it many questions. So a team of biologists at Tufts University have carried out an investigation to find out exactly what is going on in the brain once the head has been severed. So they basically took two groups of flatworms. They had one they put in a petri dish. They had one they put in a rough textured surface. And because they're actually kind of have a bit of an aversion to light, they don't tend to go into light, they decided to put a bit of liver in an illuminated space and see what would happen. Now, the rough texture, the ones living on the rough texture, tended to kind of get over their fear quicker and went and got the liver.
So they eat liver, presumably.
For some reason, it fascinated me, liver. I don't know why. Flatworms. It just makes the story even grosser. So then they sliced their heads off. That was what culminated there. They taught them to go into the light, and once they had accommodated that the light is not evil, they cut off all their heads.
So they basically they were manufacturing a memory, something that
they
could
test. They were training them, and I guess the Petri dish, maybe they were afraid it would be too slippy and they wouldn't be able to get out of the light quickly enough, but the ones on the rough texture surface just went for it and ate some nice liver. So heads off, 14 days later, new heads. With new brains. So they tried the experiment again. This time they put them all in a Petri dish. And both groups were still reluctant to go into the light. The ones that had originally learned to like it were a little bit less hesitant, but not that much. Then they gave them a refresher course, as you do. Liver good, light okay. And gave them a 4-day break, put them back in again into the environment, and the ones who had originally learnt to accommodate to the light and eat the liver shot off, ate the liver, and proved that the memories were still retained.
I just love this so much. but I'm still baffled about, you know, where is that memory stored? I mean, is it like muscle memory?
Well, this is it. We do not know yet. However, there's a few theories. They say it could be some kind of in the sensory, in the nervous system, in the cells in the nervous system. It could be cellular memory, which is kind of a theoretical idea that we can actually retain memory in ourselves and rebuild them.
And it's not, but it's not like they haven't got a separate mini.
They don't have an extra brain. No.
Because I think the praying mantis has two brains.
Yeah.
I believe.
Is that right?
Yeah, because I think when you chop one of its heads off, a part in its abdomen can continue reproducing with its sort of tertiary mind, which is a great name for a technical metal band.
I'm sure I wrote something about a spider that had a spare pedipalp, which, if you don't know, is its reproductive member, so that when one is cut off by the female, it can keep going.
But that's different from brains.
That is different from brains in some circumstances, yes.
So what can we take from this? Because we do this amount, we do this science, we get jiggy with this, with these sciences.
Yes.
Is it to help us? I mean, am I going to be able to...
Everything's about helping us, really, yeah.
Right.
We can help you, Nate.
But I'm not growing back a new brain.
No. However, I mean, the way that these flatworms can do it is because they actually have an excess of the pluripotent adult stem cells, which can become any cell in the body. And their idea is this can be kind of the beginning to our understanding of how stem cells can be used in regenerative medicine to perhaps one day, when we're all going a bit senile, replenish our brain tissue.
Fascinating study.
And keep our memories. What I want to know is what happened to the heads.
Live.
Did they regenerate?
That went in industrial waste. Yes. Well, that's actually because they can completely regenerate.
Yes.
I don't know if there's a rule whereby if you sever at a certain point,
and do they still have the memories as well?
They're just like all these flat ones.
Are they then
the same
clones of each other? Would they look at each other and
recognize each other?
Yeah. Recognize.
See, this is why we are at very early days in understanding flatworms. One day they can talk to
us. When you finish getting married, having a honeymoon, blah, 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 can you come back
I'll look into this.
Thanks.
I'm on flatworm duty.
Liv, this week, recycling bins. Turns out they're spying on me.
They are.
Concerning.
A little bit concerning.
Mm. I think it's quite concerning.
Yes. Throughout the months of May and June of this year in the City of London, if you've been walking through there, you might have been tracked.
Good God, I have.
By recycling bins. It doesn't sound all that sinister when you put it like that, but actually it's an interesting story. So there are 12 recycling bins in London that have been on the hunt for the unique identifying numbers for more than 500,000 smartphones. And this is a system put in place by a company called Renew London that runs those bins that you might have seen across if you live in London, which have a sort of advertising panel on them as well. So not only are they recycling bins, they're also a kind of media outlet. They have like video ads on them.
I've never noticed the advertising on them. I go straight for the bin hole.
So Renew London runs these bins. So it's added in some additional technology called Presence Orb, which they describe as a cookie for the real world. And by that, I don't mean a food cookie, but a web cookie, as in tracking your behaviour online. So what it does, it relies on your phone having its Wi-Fi turned on. And if that is the case, this system will collect the device's media access control address, the MAC address. And this is a little bit like an IP address, but it's kind of bound to the hardware, to the device. And so once it's got that, it can also also collect movement, the type of device, the direction and the speed at which these devices are moving between the different points in the City of London. It's kind of a proof of concept thing at the moment, but the Renew London is saying they want to eventually use it as a means of targeting advertising.
This reminds me a little bit of those smart video ads that could detect your gender and I think age in order to deliver appropriate advertising to you.
Yeah.
Which we reported on last year.
Yes, it's a little bit like that. However, they're saying that they're not trying to gather any data on the individuals, but it's more about looking at the device and the movements of those devices. And they're trying to do that in an anonymized and aggregated way, i.e. at certain number of minute intervals, each of the bins will feedback how many devices with Wi-Fi on are in the area, what their numbers are, and a few other kind of details about, you know, the whereabouts and where they're going.
We spoke to Renew CEO Kaveh Memari.
Yes.
And he said that some of the technology is, quote, on the boundaries of what is regulated, but seemed pretty open to actually having discussions around whether this is something that should be permitted, i.e. allowed but, you know, controlled.
Yeah, you know, is this personal data or not? I mean, yes, it's tracking an individual's movement, an individual at least defined by their device. It's tracking their movement, where they're going, but you don't know their name necessarily, although I'm sure you could triangulate it with other databases. You don't know their name or anything about their age or
how exactly, what are they going to target them with if they have such limited information about them? Just someone's walking past?
Well, it's a proof of concept at this stage, but it could be a person has these habits, they tend to move past this, and then on one day they're perhaps visiting another area of the city.
This person that might suggest the pub a lot when they walk past advertisers bit.
Exactly that kind of thing.
But it makes me think that there is, you know, the new sort of era of almost geo-fenced advertising, where you are advertised based on your location on your phone. So when you enter a certain part of the world or a certain part of a city or a town, your phone knows where you are, and advertising can be triggered because of that. Mm. It's already used for things like, I mean, I have a podcast app, Downcast, on my iPad. It automatically refreshes itself when I get to the office here and also when I leave. Or is it the other way around? I can't remember which way it works. But basically, whenever I get into a certain predetermined area, it says, oh, you're here. You're in Wi-Fi. This is when you think that I can refresh myself. And it updates my feeds.
Yeah.
It's like that, but for advertising.
But that's something you kind of chose to do.
Yes.
So that you would, you know.
Yeah, but people.
Whereas you might be inundated with.
True.
Utter rubbish.
I think they'd still eventually have to allow people to opt in. But what you can opt out already. You can go onto the website to check out the Presence Orb page of the company, of Renew's website. And you can enter in your own MAC address. But I found this a bit weird. So in order to opt out, you have to give the company your MAC address. So they've kind of got the data anyway, even if it's just so that they know that they shouldn't be tracking you.
Yeah, I think that's fine. I think it's easy to find that controversial, but yeah, I think that's probably fair.
Yeah.
Like, don't remember this if you see it.
Yeah, exactly.
Satellite images have also been in the news this week, but for less nefarious reasons, or more nefarious reasons, actually, I suppose, than just the fact that Oslo has denied Apple's desire to 3D map its city. It has proved that forced evictions left 9,000 Nigerians homeless.
Yeah, this is pretty awful. This is a report put out by Amnesty International and the Social and Economic Rights Action Centre, which has commissioned analysis of satellite imagery taken earlier this year over Lagos in Nigeria. Now, this is something the government has kind of denied in the past and said that they had demolished a rubbish dump in Badia East in Lagos. However, the satellite imagery and also the 9,000 people who were made homeless have proven that this is utter rubbish. The footage shows that it was a densely populated area where 9,000 people lived in concrete homes. They had businesses there and everything. It was, you know, a real community. These weren't makeshift homes. And according to reports on the ground, there was no warning. The residents only found out what was happening when police and bulldozers just turned up and decided to flatten the area to pave way for redevelopment. Now you can see it very clearly from this footage that in February there was a huge community, and a photo taken later that year in April shows a completely flat expanse where it was completely demolished. There's nothing left. You could also see on the footage of people are still living in the periphery area in makeshift homes and under a nearby bridge. So this is really something Amnesty has been trying to push for a while, awareness of this kind of forced eviction, which they say is ongoing in Nigeria and is a recurring problem.
Yeah, but they're not banned as such, are they? It's not
forced evictions.
Yeah, you can still technically do it legally.
In Nigeria you can, yeah, but in most places in the world you cannot. And I think that, you know, that is why Amnesty International is trying to highlight this and, you know, persuade Nigeria this is perhaps not a good way to treat people.
Do we have before and after shots on our website?
Yeah.
Search for satellite evictions on y.co.uk to find that. It's time to step into a little ad break dance floor and do a promotional jig. But when we come back, we're going to be questioning whether BlackBerry should or should not be sold for the benefit of itself and others. It's that time again. We are going to thank audible.co.uk for offering you listening to this podcast right there, sitting on that train, you know who you are, a free audiobook for being our listener. You can download any book for free from a choice of 80,000 on audible.co.uk by signing up to a 1 month free trial of audible.co.uk at audible.co.uk/wired. Now, you get to choose any book. You don't have to keep your account. If you like the book, it's yours to keep, and you'll be supporting our show as a result. I think you'll probably love it, and you can do that right now. That's audible.co.uk/wired. Willkommen back. It is part... Sorry, a bit of German there. it's the second half of the show, our segment portion, the discussion half of the show. And first, it's time to buckle up on that giant beast because we are riding the Technosaurus. Everyone's very pleased when that music comes on because we all like dancing to it. So this week, the Technosaurus is stomping through BlackBerry's campus because this week we all felt a bit sorry for BlackBerry, the once go-to name for business phones and the go-to product for kids looking for cheap ways to message each other has been, it's been sailing in some seriously choppy waters that have knocked quite a lot of value off its hulls, just to keep that
so
metaphor
many
going.
Metaphors, dinosaurs in boats.
Yeah. All straight off the top of the old brain box here and partly off my little script. So the company announced this week that it is looking for a new direction that might include being sold off. Some commenters have been saying that selling it off and stripping it for its parts, such as patents and top talent and so forth, is the right move and has been for some time. Or the company suggests it could start a partnership in like a joint venture with someone else. Now, this has worked really well for Nokia, which was sailing in some very similar seas up until, well, it's still quite choppy, but it's certainly been helped when it developed a relationship with Microsoft and has basically been dropped in Microsoft's hands and is asking to be remodeled with Windows Phone instead of the old Symbian system.
Who is going to want BlackBerry?
Well, that's a very good question.
For parts.
It's a very good question. It might not necessarily be for its hardware business, though, because obviously BlackBerry has struggled a lot because you've got the iPhone on the sort of, you know, luxury high-end bit. You've got Android that's making a lot of very, very attractive phones, but also across a range of sizes and
prices.
Yes, and qualities and what have you. You've got Windows Phone that's coming out with the kind of quirky, bright-coloured, you know, quite individualistic, if you like, compared to the rest of the market at least, sorts of phones. You've even got, we'll come to some other competitors in a bit. But its hardware business still counts for about 40% of BlackBerry's revenue. The problem is that the company is now worth something like less than a 12th of what it was worth even 5 years ago.
Whoa.
So it's in really, really difficult situation. And so 40% of a lot less is still not as desirable as 40% of a lot more. So it might be looking to see like which bits of the business perhaps could be put to better use with another partner. So I think that it could end up being something on the software side. I mean, BlackBerry, for one reason, has got a good track record with security. And as far as we know, the BlackBerry is still the US government's choice of secure device because of all its encryption tools and things like that. There was discussion that basically BlackBerry was too secure, I think, in India, wasn't there? Earlier this year, there was...
When the government wanted to access content of... the NSA might find it hard to...
Yeah, because if it's hyper... Wow, actually, that's a very good point. I hadn't thought of that. NSA, I wonder if they're logging encrypted BBMs.
Yeah.
Well, that's a side note. So Ken Delaney, who's a vice president at Gartner Technology Research Group, if you don't know, said that BlackBerry could try and build a pretty tidy business around managing mobile devices via its BlackBerry Enterprise service. Now, this is software that basically lets corporate IT managers very tightly control things like passwords and apps and other tools that are installed on iPhones and Android devices. And the margins are probably better than the hardware side of things as well. But really, the reason why we're talking about this is, does the guy and girl in the street staring into the windows of phones for you really give a damn?
I think there's going to be a lot of lawyers and execs crying.
And teenagers.
Teenagers,
yes. BlackBerry is, well, a couple of years ago, when the riots were taking place in London, at that time, BlackBerry's 40% of teenagers used BlackBerry.
They were driving the riots, basically.
You know, it launched as a business phone, but it got taken up by young people because of the free messaging service. Now, a lot of other phones offer free messaging services. So,
but BBM is also launching on iOS and Android in the next few weeks. It's already out in beta if you're a developer, so it's hot on the heels. And you know, for a long time, you know, BlackBerry was, well, it was kind of, it really was the business phone because it did email better than everyone else. Yeah. And it did great physical keyboards better than everyone else. It was full QWERTY, not just T9 stuff. Mm. And, you know, on the messaging side, it had this over-the-top messaging service, as you say, at a time when text were 10 pence a pop.
Yeah.
And you weren't on, like, unlimited thousands of texts a month sort of deals. But now, all of those benefits have kind of gone out the window because everyone basically does email well. I mean, you've got choices of apps and what have you to make it work for you. Mm. You've got BlackBerry Messenger on all these different devices. You've got WhatsApp and Viber and Snapchat and iMessage and all these things, Google Chat, competing against from that. And now businesses are moving towards iPhones and towards other things.
Consumerized devices.
Exactly. Or even bring your own device and just let the company manage it. Because the flexibility is far greater for, you know, VPN access, for getting into corporate networks and app distributions and just a wider range of apps that actually help you be more productive as an employee. So all of these things kind of come crashing down to make BlackBerry feel a little bit irrelevant. And I'm just sort of thinking, well, does anyone, like, if BlackBerry went away, would people be that upset?
I think there still is a little mini hardcore audience for the keyboards. I still have quite a few friends who work for big companies and they're all dished out. And they don't know how to use my touchscreen.
Well, I think that's the very problem. BlackBerry's relied on legacy contracts it's had for a long time, an established audience, and it has failed to innovate. You know, it hasn't built the ecosystem of apps that many of its competitors have.
Because
so here's the thing.
What they were
BlackBerry
10,
BB10, is actually a really nice operating system. It has some really nice touches. One of the most important, I think, is the fact that it has these two modes where one is basically for work, one is for play.
Yeah.
You can just switch them over and all your installed apps, home screens, backdrops and contacts, all of that sort of stuff switches over on the device. So it's perfect for people who do want a work phone and a personal phone to be the same device but to appear different depending on whether you're in the office or not. And it's great. And the apps, they're building it up a bit, but it's still very, very difficult. They've paid a lot of money to developers to, you know, to come on board and make apps
too
for BlackBerry.
Late.
But that's the problem. It's too late.
Too little.
So my question would be, let's just assume that BlackBerry stays independent or at least gets bought by someone that doesn't want to just demolish it and take it to bits. What could BlackBerry do that separates it from what everyone else is doing? And I've got an idea. I have one very, I think, good idea. It gets rid of BB10, for one thing. And instead, BlackBerry becomes the provider of stock Android phones. Because at the moment, when you buy like an S4, an HTC One, any of these phones, they are differentiated from each other by the fact that the manufacturers want to skin them. So on like the HTC One, you get this Blink Feed thing, which is like a news-based homepage. On the S4, you get their Touch Whiz, which is a hilarious name for a, you know, questionable interface. You know, they all have their different appeals, but basically what everyone wants is, I just want stock Android. They don't want any of this crap. They just want the pure Android experience because it's really, really good. That's why you've got the S4, I can't remember what it's called, Nexus Edition, I think it's called, and the S1, that is just released with stock Android because people want it. Now, I think BlackBerry makes... The hardware's great. People like the hardware. And stock Android means you've got all the apps. You've got a great interface, and if they could pair that up with some of the BlackBerry services and securities that could be baked into that, and but not change the interface and not do any of that stuff, that becomes a very interesting proposition, I think. And no one else is doing that. No one else is making ranges of phones, all that have stock Android, that have a certain hook. And I think maybe the hook could be the hardware. Whether I would suggest that to the CEO's face and say, this is what I think is right, I don't know. Yeah. It's just an anecdotal observation, but that is in itself a gap in the market.
Yeah.
So
just make sure it looks nothing like BlackBerry and reminds nobody of BlackBerry. No, and you'll be good.
Yeah.
Well, let us know what you think. Do you still use BlackBerry? If you do, let us know. And if you left BlackBerry but would like to go back, what would you have to see from BlackBerry in order to make that decision easier for you? podcast@wired.co.uk. We'll read some feedback out on that topic on next week's show. Second section of today's second half. Only two discussion segments for today because we've talked quite a while. It's Thank You Science. This week, we are thanking science for New Zealand because it has approved permits for the use of jetpacks. Liv, my excitement pants were bulging with pleasure. Oh, no, that's...
No.
Sorry. I was pleased to hear it, is my point here. I was a bit Alan Partridge, wasn't it?
I'm very pleased that you're pleased, Nate.
Thank you.
Jetpacks are nearly a reality. We've seen a few prototypes in the past, but a company called the Martin Aircraft Company, which makes a jetpack called the Martin Jetpack, has finally been granted an experimental flight permit in New Zealand.
And the jetpacks themselves only cost about 100 grand.
Yes, £97,000.
But they have the power
living the dream
of 200 of your finest equine quadrupeds.
Yes, they do. It has a 2-litre V4 piston, 200 horsepower gasoline engine. And it can take off and land vertically, which is very exciting. Mm. And so we can dispense with all our dreams of having Segways and replace them with slightly more expensive jetpacks.
I think you should have written to these guys, Leah, and you should arrive down the aisle on a jetpack, take it off, discard it, and take off your helmet.
And if I had a panic, I could go 1.5 kilometres into the air.
Well, can you? Actually, the problem
I'm not sure I'd be brave.
The license that's been given, the flight permit, is slightly restrictive. So you imagine jetpacks zooming off 1.5 kilometres into the air, as you said, Leah, which is the kind of, it's possible to fly that high in the Martin jetpack. However, the permit says that it's not allowed to be flown higher than 6 metres above ground or 7.6 metres above the water. And, you know, technically it could go 1.5 kilometres above the ground and 56 kilometers per hour. Now, this slightly reminds me of when cars first launched. You used to have a person with a flag walking in front of the car to alert other road users to the fact that
they're joking.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely true. You think there was a limit of 10 miles an hour or even lower.
That's true.
And that you had to always have someone in front waving this flag.
I'm surprised that you remember that, Liv. You're looking extremely good for a woman of 100.
It's a story my grandmother relayed to me, but I love it. It feels like we're not getting the most out of it with this permit, but
the cars back then, they couldn't go very fast. They physically couldn't go too fast,
but they were restricted to go slower than horses.
These guys must be gutted. 1.5 kilometers, you know, you can do it.
Well, I for one look forward to our overlords of the future ruling over us from 6 meters in the air.
Yes,
as I get onto my knees and beg for forgiveness for whatever it is that I've done to displease them. No idea where I'm going with this, but I do know that that's going to wrap up the news and discussion portions of our show. We are going to transition into a little bit of feedback, and the first thing I wanted to note is that a guy called Travis Brown wrote in to say he put our E3 2013 special podcast into his best podcasts of the month list, which is nice. He says, keep on being awesome. I'm going to try. Did I succeed?
You are awesome.
I think a little bit of poo came out.
Oh, lovely. Yes, well, that was me trying to be awesome live. Great, that's great, Travis. Paul Mellish wrote in to comment on the hate brain story from a couple of shows ago. He says, on a serious note, humanity and the internet is still in its infancy. As we move forward, more and more self-regulation and awareness on the internet will become the norm. Those born digital will reach out to give a hand up to the generations who are still struggling to come to terms with social media and its impact on our everyday lives. Personal attacks are always vile. Hopefully, the shroud behind which the faceless snipe and agitate will soon be lifted. Very succinctly put, and that is related to the hate rain story, the Twitter bot that scours the internet for hatred and hate speech and logs who distributed said speech. That's going to do it for this week, so I'm going to be abwesend. Why am I talking German twice on the show this week?
That's not actual German.
It is.
I feel like I need to tell you.
Abwesend. It means absent.
Oh, okay, that was. It wasn't before.
I said willkommen. That means welcome.
Oh, I didn't. Okay.
You should have said
retract
willkommen.
All of this.
Yeah. But I will be abwesend, Liat, because I'll be in Tokyo. So, yes, the hooves on the steering wheel will be those of Liv for the next couple of weeks. Liat, congratulations for the next few days.
Thank
Anyone
you
who wants to send messages,
much.
I'm sure know where to send that to. podcast@wider.co.uk. And I will see you in 3 weeks. We'll see you in a month, Liat.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Liv, you'll see everyone in about a week.
Indeed.
I'll miss you all.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. You've finished this week's episode of the Wired.co.uk podcast. Until next week's episode, why not download the latest issue of Wired on your iPad, Android, tablet or Kindle Fire? Do so with a discount from wired.co.uk/magazine.